Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rounding Third Sports. I'm your host, Steve, and let's get started. Today, we're going to talk about a lot of the regular sports we talk about. We'll start off with some NBA as we come into the final weekend of the regular season. And we'll talk about some Major League Baseball. You know, we'll go through our standings predictions, and we'll talk a little bit of relocation and what that could mean for the landscape of Major League Baseball. We'll talk about the NFL as the schedule came out for the new season. We'll talk some games to watch, who benefits from the new schedule, and a little bit more about that. And we're going to talk about something I have not talked about on this podcast yet today, and that is horse racing. As we had the Kentucky Derby recently, and we'll talk about a little bit of what happened there, not so much in the race, but post-race. And we'll talk about what's leading up to tonight's race, which is the Preakness. So we will discuss that as well. So let's get started. We're going to talk about the NBA first. Again, as we come into the final weekend of the regular season, and everybody has, for the most part, the teams that are in the playoffs have two games. Some have one game left. So let's look at the standings as they are right now. Again, this is as of the end of Friday night. So we still have the Saturday and Sunday full slates left to determine the real true playoff standings. So right now in the East, the 10 teams have been determined, right? So the bottom five have all been eliminated. So we know who our six teams are that are making the playoffs. We know who our four play-in teams are. It's just a matter of what order they go in now. So in the East, the 76ers did clinch that first seed, that number one seed for the playoffs. Number two is the Brooklyn Nets right now. So they are a game and a half behind Philadelphia. Milwaukee comes in at that three seed, having clinched their division. Atlanta is number four, Miami number five, and the Knicks are number six. So still to be determined is who wins that third division. So we have the Hawks and the Heat are both a half a game apart. So that will be important to see how that plays out. Atlanta only has one game remaining while Miami has two. So Miami very well could clinch that division and therefore end up as the number four seed. And then of course you have the Knicks who have two games left who could potentially sneak up into that four seed as well. So there's three teams fighting for those bottom three playoff spots. For the play-in game, we have the Boston Celtics. I'm pretty sure they have clinched that seven seed, that first play-in seed, I guess you would call it. And then we have Charlotte, Indiana, and Washington, who are all a half a game apart for those final three play-in spots. So again, the reason that could potentially be a big deal is that number eight seed. All right, so all three are trying to vie for that number eight seed or that second play-in spot, I guess we can call it. The difference is if they get that spot, then they're in contention for the seven seed in the actual playoff, whereas if they don't make it to that spot, then they're going to be in the play-in game for the number eight seed in the playoff. So a lot still could change there, but we do have our 10 teams determined, I guess. Other than that, I mean, there could be some shuffling between the three. Really, all the way from two to six, there could be some shuffling. So Brooklyn and Milwaukee, those two clearly are vying for that two and three seed. And then Atlanta, Miami, and New York all still playing for that number four, five, and six seed. So still some changes to come there. Interesting note that the Celtics fell as far as they did to the seven seed, to the first play-in team. And New York, the Knicks, who have not really been competitive for a good amount of time, have made it to, at the very minimum, the sixth seed in the East, if not all the way up to potentially to the fourth seed. So that's a big deal for New York fans, for that team that has struggled for a long time. And the Washington Wizards at that 10 seed right now, that last play-in spot with Westbrook and Beal being there in that position. Over in the Western Conference, again, the 10 teams have been determined. The biggest difference here is going to be that 6 and 7 seed. So there's still potential for one team to raise into the top 6 and one team to fall into the play-in tournament. So at number 1, we have the Utah Jazz. Number 2, we have the Phoenix Suns. So those two are still fighting it out to clinch that number 1 overall seed. Utah only has one game left, while Phoenix does still have two remaining. Denver and the Clippers are still fighting it out for that number 3 and 4 seed, as they are right now equal. They have the same record, so both of them have one game left. It's not against each other, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. If they were to tie, meaning they would end the season with the same record, so either they both win their last game or they both lose their last game, Denver would clinch the 3 seed, and the Clippers would have the 4 seed. Dallas is at the number 5 seed right now, and then number 6 right now is Portland. Now, the team that could change that is the number 7 seed, the LA Lakers. So the Lakers are one of just a few teams in the West that still have two games left. So they could sneak into that top 6 and get out of that play-in tournament, which I'm sure, if I'm LeBron, if I'm AD, you know, I want to get out of that play-in tournament. Especially since the number 8 seed and the team that you would most likely play right now is the Golden State Warriors. I don't think that's a team I would want to play in a play-in tournament. But again, the number 8 and 9 seed are still up in the air. As Golden State and Memphis have the same record. So both still have one game left, and it's actually against each other. So the winner will get the 8 seed and play either the Lakers or Portland in that first play-in game. The loser will then play San Antonio for that second play-in tournament game. So still some maneuvering that could happen in the West as well, for there being only 2 days left in the regular season, and for many teams, either one or two games left, there's still a lot that's up in the air. All right, so we are going to move on to horse racing, something I didn't even really consider when I first created this podcast that I would be talking about, but having been around it for 6 years, you know, I learned a good amount. I wouldn't say a lot. You know, I'm not saying I'm an expert by any means on horse racing, but I did learn a little bit about just horse racing, the Triple Crown races, obviously being a big deal. So let's talk about what happened after the Kentucky Derby. So Medina Spirit, Bob Baffert, 7-time champion now, has had a horse win the Kentucky Derby 7 times. His horse, Medina Spirit, wins the Kentucky Derby. And as is normal protocol after a horse race, they get tested, you know, to make sure there's no illegal substances that were used. And it was actually found that an illegal substance was used. Now, that substance, as of right now, so they're still investigating, they're still trying to determine exactly what caused it, but what it looks like right now, according to Baffert himself, is that Medina Spirit was treated for dermatitis with an antifungal or ointment that contained the steroid betamethasone. That's the steroid that was found in the horse's system during that drug test. According to Baffert, the ointment was used once a day leading up to the race for dermatitis. And it wasn't until later that experts had told him that that could explain the test results. So the horse did test positive for 21 picograms of that substance, which is typically given to horses therapeutically to help their joints, but is a violation even at trace amounts on race day in Kentucky. So, call it what it is. Say what you want about it. But I feel like it is clear that an illegal substance was used. Now, I don't think it was to purposely boost Medina Spirit. I think it was truly therapeutic. It was to treat the dermatitis. However, it still contained that betamethasone, which is a violation. Violation's a violation. But we will see what happens. They're still investigating. They're still trying to determine. But if Medina Spirit were to fail another drug test, or if he fails another round of testing and it shows the presence of that betamethasone, then it would be disqualified from the Derby, and runner-up Mandaloon would be elevated to the winner. It has not been determined how long it's going to take to investigate or make the decision, but it is still under investigation. Bob Baffert has been banned from the Preakness race tonight, so he will not be there. However, Medina Spirit will be running. So, other side note, and again, you can take it for what it is, but Medina Spirit's failed drug test is the fifth medication violation in the past 13 months. 13 months, so in the last year, for Baffert, who is a two-time Triple Crown winning trainer and the face of the sport. So not a good look by any means. So that brings us to today. Leading up to today, it appears that Medina Spirit has passed all drug tests leading up to the race. So the horse has been cleared to run in the Preakness. Now, the way I take that is that means that most likely it will not be disqualified from the Kentucky Derby win. But more to come on that. So leading up to the Preakness, there will be a limited capacity of 10,000 fans expected there tonight, which is 10% of what usually packs the grandstand and infield, and is a fifth of what was at the Kentucky Derby. Obviously, Medina Spirit going for his second win of the season, which would put him on his way towards, or its way towards, a Triple Crown. So, again, for a third year in a row, all eyes are on the Preakness to see what's going to happen, because there is more drama. If you're not sure what I'm talking about, let's look back to what has happened in the past couple of years. So if Medina Spirit wins the Preakness, before I get to that, first, it's really, if you're Bob Baffert, you're kind of in a no-win situation here. Because if Medina Spirit goes and wins this race, then the general public is going to think, okay, well, there's still something funny happening. There's still something illegal being used. But if Medina Spirit doesn't run well, no matter what the reason, then the thought is, well, now that proves that something funny was happening at the Kentucky Derby. So if you're Bob Baffert, you're kind of in a lose-lose situation here. Whether your horse wins or your horse runs poorly, There's going to be concerns about what happened at the Derby and potentially what happened today. Now, because of the presence of Medina Spirit at Preakness, there's still a Triple Crown possibility as soon as the gates open. The Preakness is usually the safest bet on the sports calendar. However, the past 2 years broke that trend. So last season, of course, because of the pandemic, the races got shuffled. So the Kentucky Derby happened. You know, Preakness was not the second race of the season. And then in 2019, there was a lot of drama because the Derby had a mess after Maximum Security, who had won the Kentucky Derby, was disqualified, and Country House was named the winner. And then both of those horses ended up skipping the Preakness. So a lot of confusion, a lot of drama. I remember watching that race. There was a lot of drama as everybody kind of sat there waiting to hear what was going to be the decision, who actually won the race. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Now, Medina Spirit is a tainted champion because of the betamethasone that was in the post-race blood sample. He'll get another opportunity tonight at the Preakness. And also, Horse Concert Tour, who is a Bob Baffert-trained horse, passed 3 additional pre-race drug tests as well. Now, Baffert and Maryland racing officials all agreed to these pre-race drug tests, so nothing is being forced. Nothing is being, you know, it's not like Baffert didn't agree with the races. You know, he agreed to all of them. And my internet has frozen, so I can no longer look at that article. So let's talk about a little bit more about the Preakness as we look at the race tonight. So this is the 146th running of the Preakness Stakes. There are 10 horses that will be running. Medina Spirit, being the Kentucky Derby winner, starts as the favorite to win the Preakness in Baltimore tonight. Let's see. The race will happen at 6:50 p.m. tonight. This is Saturday. Again, there's 10 horses that will be running tonight. So the favorite being Medina Spirit is at a plus 180, with the second favorite being Concert Tour at a plus 250. After that, you have Midnight Bourbon at 5-1 odds coming out of the number 5 gate. You've got Crowded Trade in the 4 gate at 10-1 odds. Rombauer in the 6 gate at 12-1 odds. There's 3 horses currently at 15-1 odds, being Keep Me In Mind in the 2 gate, Unbridled Honor at the 8 gate, and Risk Taking at the 9 gate. Then you have, let's see, after them, you'll have your final 2 horses of Ram out of the 1 gate, or I'm sorry, France Go Deena out of the 7 gate at 20-1 odds, and then Ram out of the 1 gate at 30-1 odds. So there's your 10 horses. Again, in order of odds, you've got Medina Spirit, Concert Tour, Midnight Bourbon, Crowded Trade, Rombauer, Keep Me In Mind, Unbridled Honor, Risk Taking, France Go Deena, or however you pronounce that, and Ram. So if Medina Spirit does not win this second leg, obviously Concert Tour is a big one, but because of my favorite number being number 5, I like to, it's just always how it's been. I like to pick the number 5, the horse that's racing out of the 5 gate. And just so happens he's also at 5-1 odds. So for my prediction, if Medina Spirit's not winning this, I would go with Midnight Bourbon as my pick to win the Preakness Stakes. So there you have it. Make your choices, make your picks, do what you need to do. I'll put a post on my Instagram page about the Kentucky Derby check it out. If you want to comment what your pick is for the Preakness Stakes, let me know who you think is going to win. All right, let's look at, because we still have time before our break, let's look at Major League Baseball. We'll look at the standings first, all right? So we'll do the standings thing first, then we'll go to relocation, potentially, most likely after the break. Again, last week was the first time this season that I did not have the Dodgers going to the World Series, and the reason was they were not in the top five teams to make the playoffs based on standings. So St. Louis took that spot in the World Series from them after jumping from not being in the playoffs to the number one overall seed in the NL, the National League. And then from the West, for the third straight week, I had Boston representing the American League. So, once I get a new sheet of paper here to track this, we are in week six now. And again, I do this every week. We look at the playoff seeds for both leagues, and I give my World Series prediction based off of that. So, in the American League, the number one overall seed is actually the Chicago White Sox. So after 3 weeks in the wild card game, they now are the number one seed in the American League. So your number two and three teams would actually be Boston and Oakland. Both are tied. I think I'm going by runs scored as the tiebreaker. So that would put Boston as the two seed and Oakland as the three seed. So that'll be 2 weeks in a row for Oakland and Oakland was number one last week. So this will be the second time Oakland's been in the three seed, and the second week in a row that Boston is in the two seed. And then the wild card teams, we would have Cleveland facing Houston. So this is Houston's first time back in the playoffs since week one, where they were the number one seed. And now they squeak in as the number five. All right, in the National League. Oh, my prediction to come out of the American League. Man, I've gone with Boston for three straight weeks. But honestly, everything I'm seeing and hearing about the White Sox is that they are the real deal. So I am actually going to go with the White Sox representing the American League in the World Series. All right, in the National League, the number one overall seed is still the San Francisco Giants. So that is two of the last 3 weeks, San Francisco has been number one. The number two seed would be the St. Louis Cardinals, and they would be facing off against the New York Mets. So this will be the first time since week three that the Mets have been in the playoffs, and they're in the same spot as the number three seed. All right, and then your wild card teams. We have San Diego they have been in the wild card game every week, six straight weeks in the wild card. And they would be facing off against the Dodgers. So the Dodgers, after missing out on the playoffs for the first time last week, they come back in as the number five seed this week. So I still am having a hard time in wanting to pick San Francisco. I just can't do it. I don't think they're that good. I don't think they're going to stay up there. Honestly, I'm going to pick St. Louis again this week because, again, they've been playing very well. I don't like them. I can't stand them. They are, you know, obviously a big rival of the Reds. Unfortunately, I cannot ignore what they're doing. They're 23-16. Their last 10 games, they're 6-4. It's hard to pick against them right now. So Chicago White Sox, St. Louis Cardinals are my World Series pick for week 6. All right, so I'm a little early today, but I'm going to go ahead and take my break. You know what? Actually, no. I'm going to go ahead and we're going to talk about this relocation thing real quick first. So this past week, it came out that Oakland is looking to potentially relocate. You know, we've heard rumors about this for years now. The biggest thing that Oakland wants is they want their Riverfront Stadium. And I'm not talking about Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati. I'm talking about they want their brand new stadium to be built on the waterfront. That's the biggest thing they want, and they want to do it in Oakland. Now, it hasn't happened yet, and they keep being told no. And so they are now going to use another method in strong-arming into getting what they want. So here's a list of six potential cities that they could relocate to and what it would mean for the Major League Baseball landscape and realignment. So the first two and the last one would not affect realignment at all. Number one is Las Vegas. They could follow the Raiders' direction and go to Las Vegas, joining also the Golden Knights of the NHL as their first major professional sports team. Las Vegas has had a minor league affiliate for a long time. They have the legalization of gambling on sports and a continued existence of other pro sports teams now without a headline-grabbing incident stemming from being in Las Vegas. So it could very well happen. Also, would not force them to realign. The second choice would be Portland. Again, they could stay in the West Division. Seattle would then have a natural geographical rival. But also, being in Portland, you would still be able to build your waterfront stadium. So that is also a possibility. The third choice that would allow them to stay in the American League West is San Jose. Now, they've talked about this before, but they have been blocked in years past by the Giants because the Giants have territorial rights in that area. I don't think that changes. I don't think the Athletics go to San Jose. Now, his last three choices are all in the East and would force realignment. And I'm going to give you the cities, and I'm going to talk to you about what that would mean for realignment. So the first one is Nashville. Nashville is trying very hard because they really want to get a Major League Baseball team in Nashville. Now, if they went to Nashville, there's a very easy realignment method. You move Minnesota from the AL Central to the AL West, and then Nashville, the A's, then move to the AL Central. So that's an easy one. These last two teams are Montreal and Charlotte. Now, Tampa Bay has already called dibs on hosting half of their games in Montreal, but Oakland could say, you know what, we'll give you our full team. Full 162-game slate, and that could happen. Charlotte is another one that really wants a Major League Baseball team. Now, for either of that to happen, there would be a little bit of a shift in the landscape. So, again, Minnesota would move to the AL West. Milwaukee would move to the AL Central. Atlanta would move to the NL Central. And then Montreal or Charlotte, wherever they move to, would then be in the NL East. So again, that's a big change up. It has four teams that are changing divisions. So let me give that to you again. Because Montreal or Charlotte would be in the NL East, Atlanta would then be pushed to the NL Central. Geographically, makes the most sense. That would force Milwaukee to move to the AL Central, where they came from originally. And then that would move Minnesota to the AL West. All right, I'm out of time. I'm going to take a break. I will be right back. Welcome back. Just wanted to touch base on that real quick because I know I had to go to break real quick. So I just want to make sure that what I was saying made sense. So regarding the Athletics moving, again, there's no guarantee it's going to happen. I am a huge fan of hypothetical realignments. I've done multiple in the past 10 years, both in all three major sports, in Major League Baseball, the NFL, and the NBA. I've done hypothetical realignments on all three multiple times over. I absolutely love doing the hypothetical realignments. I've done them on a much larger scale than just one team being added. I've done realignments of and relocations of like 4 to 5 teams sometimes, and adding teams and there's been new team or inaugural teams. There's been relocations. I've done a lot of it. This one is very minor, really. The fact that obviously three of the potential city moves wouldn't force any realignment. The fourth city would only require two teams to flip spots. And then the last two potential cities would create a realignment of four teams. That's not that big of a realignment. So the last one, just to repeat it again and make it go a little slower so I wasn't rushing through it. But if, let's say hypothetically again, that the Athletics move to either Montreal or Charlotte, that team would make the most sense in the NL East. And here's why. Montreal, you don't want to put them in the AL East because you want to have that interleague rival of Toronto. So you don't want to put them in the same division. Charlotte, on the other hand, would also not make that much sense in the AL East because of the five teams that are there. You wouldn't want to move any of those other five teams. Atlanta would make the most hypothetical sense to move because of the fact they are more centralized than they are Eastern. If you look at the map, you know, New York is not going to go to the Central. Miami is not going to go to the Central. So it came down to Atlanta, Washington, or Philly having to move. Atlanta is more central than either of the other two teams. So that's why I chose to move Atlanta. Now, I could have just as easily put Atlanta in the AL Central, but they make the most sense historically in the NL Central and even geographically in the NL Central. So you pair them up with Chicago Cubs, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and St. Louis. You then move Milwaukee back to the American League. That's where they came from when we did this last realignment. When Houston went to the AL, Milwaukee came to the NL. So it makes the most sense. Actually, it was even before then that Milwaukee had moved to the NL Central. So Milwaukee goes back to the AL Central, makes sense with Kansas City, Detroit, Cleveland, and the White Sox. Milwaukee's right there in that geographical area. So that makes a perfect sense. And then you move Minnesota to the West. Look, there's no other team that makes sense in the West than Minnesota. If we're being realistic, Seattle being up there helps because they have that northern geographic rival. But other than that, no other team made sense. You're not moving Milwaukee. The only other one that could have made sense would be Kansas City. But again, they're a geographical rival of St. Louis. Let's keep that there. So Minnesota moves, and it kind of is what it is. They could have a geographical interleague rival of Colorado now. So that was the reasoning behind that realignment, okay? All right, let's move on to the NFL. Let's talk about their schedule. So obviously the big takeaway is that it's an 18-week schedule now. There's 17 games plus one bye week. That's the big takeaway here. Now, a few notes, and I'm not going to get into huge detail about every team and what their schedule looks like. I will do that at a later date, probably July, maybe August. I'll do something I've done in years past. I haven't done it probably in the past 2 years, but I used to, in the preseason, predict every single game for every team. You know, and I'm not going to go through all 32 teams and say week one, you know, here's I'll make my predictions. And then what I do with that is I then use that to predict the playoffs all the way up to the Super Bowl champs preseason. So I'll do that probably in either July or August. I want to wait till after we get through training camp, any more free agent signings, injuries, anything that could affect the season this far out. I mean, we are still a long ways away from the season starting. You know, we're in the middle of May. We've still got all of June, all of July, all of August before we really get to the season. That's 3 full months. I don't want to jump the gun too soon, especially with Aaron Rodgers still kind of being up in the air. I don't want to make predictions and then Aaron Rodgers move and I have to totally scrap him. So I'm going to wait as long as I can to do that, but I will do that on a future episode where I give my predictions for the full season, standings, playoffs, Super Bowl, everything. But today I'm not going to do that. Today I'm just going to go through some notes, some key takeaways, some nice matchups, and who kind of got a good deal on the playoff or on the schedule. So obviously we start the regular season with the defending Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and they will be hosting the Dallas Cowboys on September 9th. Week one also starts off pretty strong with Kansas City facing against Cleveland and the Saints facing, you know, without Drew Brees, facing Green Bay, who may or may not have Aaron Rodgers. We also have Sam Darnold, who is the new Carolina Panthers quarterback, facing off against his old New York Jets team, who have Zach Wilson. And then Monday Night Football starts the season with the Baltimore Ravens visiting the Las Vegas Raiders. We have two international games this season, with Atlanta hosting the Jets and Jacksonville hosting Miami in London this year. So that'll be interesting. All right, so let's look at this. There are 5 questions that were asked to some NFL analysts, and we're going to go through these questions and see what they say. So the first question is, which matchup do you have circled on your calendar? Now, before I even read this, the ones that come to my immediate mind that I've heard talked about a lot on Get Up with Greeny and talked about on KJ and Zubin is the Browns and the Chiefs in week one and Tampa Bay, New England, I think in week four is when they play, maybe week five. So obviously Tom Brady returning to Gillette Stadium in New England and facing off against Bill Belichick and the Patriots. And the Browns-Chiefs rematch from last year's playoffs will be an interesting match. So let's look at what they say now. So first one is week 16, Bills at Patriots. They feel like the roster upgrades on the Patriots makes them a tough team to play this year. And obviously this matchup will have major implications in seeding and the AFC East race itself. This analyst said the Browns at the Chiefs. So we've already talked about that. They're calling the Browns a legitimate Super Bowl contender this year, potentially. So it'll be interesting to see there. This one said the Bills at the Chiefs. So obviously that's a rematch of the AFC title game. You know, Josh Allen had a great season last year, and then Buffalo kind of fell off against Kansas City in the AFC title game. This rematch should be a little bit closer, should be a lot better of a game, but we'll see how it goes. And that is in week five. This one, of course, actually the next two both say Buccaneers at the Patriots in week four. I don't really have to pump this game up any. You know, the storyline speaks for itself. Brady back in Foxborough facing his old team. That's all you really need to say there. If the numbers work out right, Brees could potentially pass Drew. Brady could potentially pass Drew Brees as the NFL's all-time leader in career passing yards. He'll need to average about 289 yards per game over the first four games to do it that night. So, not only is Brady returning to Foxborough to face his old team and his old coach, but if he averages the right amount of yards every game leading up to that, he could potentially become the all-time leader in career passing yards in the stadium that he played the majority of his career in. So that's actually kind of interesting. That would be really neat to happen. I don't like Brady, but I respect him as a player. And that would be a neat feat, a neat accomplishment for his career to be able to do it in that stadium. This writer says the Chiefs at the Ravens in week two. So obviously Mahomes versus Lamar Jackson. That storyline speaks for itself. Next question, who or what is the biggest winner of the schedule release? So the first writer says the week one primetime slate. So you've got Dak Prescott against Tom Brady. You've got Matthew Stafford in his first game with the Rams. We could potentially see Justin Fields take some snaps for Chicago. And then you have Lamar Jackson against the Raiders in Vegas. This writer says the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So they have the easiest projected schedule based on rosters. They face the NFC and the AFC East division. The Bucs face the NFC and the AFC East divisions, which are not that good. I mean, we can look at it, call it what it is. Buffalo is probably the best team out of those divisions combined. After that, you've got a bunch of mediocre teams. They also have the benefit of a weak division themselves. The Falcons, the Panthers, the Saints minus Drew Brees, that's a pretty easy slate. So if they happen to win all of those games, and of course, you know, let's say they lose to the Bills. Let's give them that. We'll give the Bills one win. That's 6-9. That's 12 wins right there. Thirteen wins right there. 4, 7, 6, 13. So they're set up pretty nice. This writer says the Dallas Cowboys, 9 of Dallas's opponents had a long losing record last season, including the entire NFC East division, of course. And then other than that, really the only toughest teams they'll have is the Saints, the Buccaneers, and the Chiefs. But really that's about it. So the biggest question will be how Prescott comes back from his ankle surgery. So we could see a Dallas team that does far better and kind of runs away with that division. This writer says the Philadelphia Eagles. He actually says all of the NFC East teams got nice-looking draws, which will help after what last season looked like. The Eagles don't have to get on a plane after week 10. Late season travel is a big part of what players look at when they assess the schedule. I haven't dug in to know whether Philly is the biggest winner, but I did see the late season travel note and thought it was worth pointing out here. Okay, so that makes me wonder. I want to see. I want to pull up Philadelphia's schedule, and I'll go on while this is loading because I know it'll take a minute. Okay, never mind. It's not going to take a minute. So after week 10, he said. Okay, I'm going to keep going. We'll come back to Philadelphia's schedule. This writer says capacity for hype. The NFL added a new level to this ridiculous and beautiful day by teasing out the week one schedule on its partners' morning shows. Um, I'm just going to ignore that. That's kind of a waste. This one says the Carolina Panthers. So they don't play any teams coming off of a bye and overall has a plus 13-day rest differential relative to its opponents over the course of the year. That's the highest rest differential among all teams scheduled since 2002. So that's good for a Panthers team that's been struggling. All right, before I go on, let me pull up the schedule before I go to the next question, and let's look at what the schedule looks like. So it says after week 10, they don't have to get on a plane. So they play this is Philly. They play the Saints in week 11 at home. Okay, so let's look at the away games. They play at New York for the Giants, at the Jets the next week. Then they have a bye week. They're home against Washington, home against New York, and then at Washington and home against Dallas. So yeah, after week 10, when they travel to Denver and realistically they play their away games this year. They play at Atlanta week 1, at Dallas week 3, at Carolina week 5, at Las Vegas week 7, at Detroit week 8, and at Denver, week 10. After that point, they're in New York 2 weeks from Philly. They're in Washington 1 week. And that's it. That's their away games. So, yeah, that's good for Philadelphia in terms of not having to travel far in the last half of the season. All right, let's look at the next question. Which rookie debut are you most interested in and why? Now, if I had to answer that question, I would say Zach Wilson. I would say Zach Wilson or Justin Fields. One, I want to see what Zach Wilson is all about. You know, being at BYU, I didn't see his games last season, so I don't know a lot about him. So I would be interested to see how he plays, but two, how he plays for the Jets. And I'd like to see what that Jets team looks like this year. Justin Fields, obviously being a Buckeye, I know how he can play. I just want to see him get the opportunity in Chicago and see how his development really plays out. All right, here's the answers from these writers. First one says Kyle Pitts, Eagles versus Falcons. Pitts has a tight end frame but traits of a wide receiver. There's matchup ability at all three levels of the field with scoring upside in the red zone. So that's his choice. This one says Trevor Lawrence against the Texans. It's a road game, but he's set up about as well as you can for an NFL debut. He'll face probably the league's worst defense on paper. They no longer have J.J. Watt. They no longer have Benardrick McKinney. And Bradley Roby has been suspended. So that's a weak defense to face off against. This one says Najee Harris. Pittsburgh has a tough schedule. The offensive line is patchy. Ben Roethlisberger is almost 40 years old. Harris, however, is the best. Has the potential to be the best every down back since Le'Veon Bell, and will set a tone in Week 1, is what they say. All right, this one says Zach Wilson. He plays the Panthers. Or at the Panthers. So week 1, he faces Sam Darnold, who knows the Jets. So that'll be interesting. He is saying that most likely if Wilson struggles in week 1 and Darnold lights it up in the same game, it's not going to be a fun week for him, which I agree with. All right, this writer says Travis Etienne again versus the Texans. Despite the presence of James Robinson and Carlos Hyde, Travis Etienne has a Percy Harvin-like hybrid role. So we'll get to see week 1 what that actually looks like for Jacksonville. And we know how Urban Meyer is with that type of offense. You know, he likes that he likes that type. You know, he coached that type at Florida in the Percy Harvin type. This one says Ja'Marr Chase, Bengals versus the Vikings. It's the Joe Burrow Chase reunion, and it'll be extra sweet after we missed Chase in 2020. He opted out of the college season. I forgot about that part. I didn't even realize that Ja'Marr Chase didn't even play last season. And, of course, Burrow missed the last half of his season because of injury. So, you know, they did a lot of good things at LSU. And if they could find that same success in Cincinnati, that'd be amazing. All right, next question. Which win total over or under do you feel best about picking right now? This one says Washington over 8 wins. Again, I agree with that. I think that'd be very easy to overcome. The Raiders over 7.5. That'll be an interesting one. We'll see how that goes. Vikings over 8.5 wins. I think that will seriously depend on Aaron Rodgers and where he's at. 49ers under 10 wins. And he says, what's more likely? The 49ers go through a full season with Jimmy Garoppolo as their quarterback, or for one reason or another, Trey Lance takes over at some point this season. Assuming that Trey Lance takes over, 10 wins is a big number for a team that transitions to a rookie quarterback. I get that. This one says Steelers under 6 wins. Or I'm sorry, Steelers under 9 wins. Again, Ben Roethlisberger, almost 40 years old, questionable offensive line. That would be very difficult. The defense was elite last season, but know that the side of the ball is less stable from year to year, especially with Cam Hayward and Joe Hayden getting older. All right, last question. Who is your early Super Bowl pick? This one says the Chiefs over the Rams. Stafford elevates a passing game in L.A. That will be more vertical and more explosive. We know the Rams defense can play, but I still like the Chiefs to win it. Mahomes is the difference maker here with the playmaking ability to take over games. This one says the Buccaneers over the Browns. Tampa Bay will return its entire starting lineup. Its young defense should only be better. Cleveland's offense was already very good last season, and the front office did an A-plus job overhauling and improving its defense. As long as Baker Mayfield doesn't stumble, the Browns should be legitimate Super Bowl contenders. This one says Packers over the Bills. Basically, it says, putting aside the drama with Rodgers, the Packers were on the brink for 2 years. A team with back-to-back 13-win seasons and NFC title game appearances returns its core. And it might be a contract extension away from another spite season from Rodgers. Buffalo has made a jump. Each year with Josh Allen. And they're hoping for another jump this season. This one says Bills over the Rams. I have no idea who to pick in the NFC, but I don't want to pick the Bucs because I don't believe in repeats in this league. The Rams look good. We'll go with them. Until the next time I'm asked for a pick. But the headline here is the first Super Bowl title in Bills history and a statue for McDermott in Buffalo. All right, this one says Chiefs over the Buccaneers. It's a boring repeat, but it's an early pick. I'm not going to go any further than that. This one says Browns over the Rams. Cleveland's roster is overflowing with talent. Garrett, Beckham, Ward, strong offensive line. They're stacked to the point they should be able to win, even without an elite-tier quarterback. The Rams have incredible upside with stars on defense and potential improvement on offense with Stafford now under center. All right, let's look at six key takeaways plus a few games to watch to close out the podcast today. And again, I'm just waiting for my internet to catch up with me here. So just a note that the Super Bowl is in Los Angeles this year on February 13th. Two games in London, no game in Mexico City, a 17th regular season game, all right. So, here's an interesting note for you. More than 80,000 playable schedules were produced, and the scheduling group reviewed nearly 500 of them by hand starting right after the Super Bowl. The NFL uses research and analytics to predict which games will capture an audience in which markets. One of the big points of emphasis this season was the Sunday afternoon packages, the ones on CBS and the ones on Fox. So, I didn't know that. I had no clue that that's how the schedules were made. One of our jobs is to make sure we have something of interest for each fan in different markets. I think we did a really good job of the distribution of games on Sunday afternoons to keep fans engaged. So if they have a choice of playing golf or watching the games, they'll want to watch the game. Now, just saying, if I had a choice between playing golf and watching the games, I'd be hard-pressed not to choose playing golf. Not going to lie. I enjoy playing golf. It's a nice atmosphere. It's good relaxation. I would prefer to go play golf almost any day. Now, if you challenge me to play golf on Saturday versus watching a good Buckeyes game or a really good college football game, that'd be a tougher decision for me. But between NFL and playing golf, I'll go play golf every day. All right, to end this podcast, I wanted to go through a couple notes that I realized I didn't get to talk about. I didn't realize it cut me off. So basically what they're doing is on opening weekend, they're going to give you a double header. So CBS and Fox will both get double headers to try to get every fan four games on Sunday afternoon. Also, the Rams and the Raiders, who both opened new stadiums last year, will get a chance to finally show off their stadiums as they both have primetime slots on their final weekend. Let's see. Okay, so let's look at these storylines for the season, for the schedule this year. So again, number one is that Tom Brady is returning to Foxborough, Massachusetts in week four. So the reason that this game happens in week four and not later in the season, every network was trying to vie for that game. And the NFL felt strong that it belonged in the prime time. Those were the big considerations. What was not was that the fear that Brady could get hurt, ruining the game if it happened later in the season. They said this is a once-in-a-lifetime game. We really liked it early, giving us a huge start. So that makes sense. I get their reasoning for that. If Brady gets hurt, that is the sole purpose for that game. If Brady were to get hurt, that completely ruins it. So having it earlier is going to be better. All right, so let's talk about bye weeks. So typically, it's hard to have more bye weeks. Now, the first thing many coaches are looking at is the fact that they added a game without the addition of a second bye week. So the early bye weeks are week six with Atlanta and New York, who will be returning from London, and the Saints and the 49ers. They would have allowed for bye weeks in week five, but had ruled out week four, which is when bye weeks started last year, because of the 18-week schedule. So the unfortunate part for Atlanta, New York, New Orleans, and San Francisco, having a bye week in week six means you have 12 weeks straight with no byes after that. So that's going to be hard. Let's see. The other storylines they're talking about, not really anything important. So they last year they gave Buffalo 4 primetime games, and it worked out because they end up supplanting the Patriots in the AFC East. This year, Cleveland was originally scheduled for just 2 primetime games last year, but this year have 3 under the lights. So they're projecting Cleveland to have a bigger season. So that's how they do it. These teams that they're expecting to have big jumps in their season, they're going to give them more primetime games, which is why Cleveland has 3 this year. Let's see. Trevor Lawrence might be the most eagerly awaited quarterback to enter the NFL since Peyton Manning, or at least Manning's successor, Andrew Luck, but that isn't reflected in the Jacksonville Jaguars' initial schedule. So they're slated for just 1 primetime game, which is Week 4 Thursday night against the Bengals, continuing a stretch dating back to 2012 without a Sunday or Monday night game. The NFL is happy with the Thursday night game because it features the last 2 first overall draft picks, and the Jaguars are also expected to have a national preseason game to showcase Lawrence. Okay, last year's schedule produced some oddities that are usually avoided, like the 5 teams that played 3 straight road games and the 10 teams that had 3 straight home contests. This season, the quirkiest schedule belongs to Baltimore, who plays 4 games in a row at home beginning in Week 5 and have a bye week in between. After an October 3rd tilt in Denver, the Ravens will sleep on their own beds until they leave for November 11th game in Miami. All right, let's talk about games to watch to end this. I know I've run long this week, but so Week 1, Dallas at Tampa Bay. It'll be a good season opener. You'll get a good look at what the Buccaneers' offense looks like, and you'll get a good look at the Cowboys' defense as well as Dak Prescott. Week 3, Green Bay at San Francisco. Really, we're looking at San Francisco to make a rebound from their injury-struggled season last year. Week 4, obviously, is Tampa Bay at New England. Speaks for itself. Week 5, you have Buffalo at Kansas City. AFC Championship game rematch. Really a test for Buffalo to see if they've overcome their struggles. Week 9, then, we have Green Bay at Kansas City. If we have Rodgers still in Green Bay. Week 11, Dallas at Kansas City. Again, Dak Prescott returns, but this is really a test for the Cowboys' new-look defense. How can they perform against Patrick Mahomes? So Dallas has the reigning Super Bowl teams in Tampa and Kansas City, and they're at both. They're at Kansas City and at Tampa. Buffalo at Tampa. So Buffalo also gets both of those teams. So how much better is the Bucs offense after a year together? Can Josh Allen handle the Bucs defense? A lot of championship hopes in that game. Baltimore at Cleveland in Week 14. This could be the rivalry that defines that division for years to come. I'll agree with that. I'll add the Bengals maybe in a few years. I don't think they're quite ready to be there. Week 15, Kansas City at the Chargers. Offensive Rookie of the Year, Justin Herbert, against Mahomes in a late-season game that could have playoff implications. Also in Week 15, you have Seattle at the Rams. So the Rams sacked Russell Wilson 5 times in their playoff win last year. Also, does Stafford's arrival help their ascension back to the top of the toughest division in the NFC? And then Week 16, Jacksonville at New York Jets. So the first of what could be many meetings between Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson. So my guess is that the NFL is hoping that Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson turns into Peyton and Tom Brady. That would be my assumption there. But there you have it. Those are the games to look out for this year. Again, as we get closer to the season, I will do my full season projection. Every game, every team, their standings, playoff seeding, playoff predictions, Super Bowl predictions, all of that. And again, that'll be later on in the year, probably July, August time frame, most likely in August, but we'll see what we're looking at. Again, don't forget to drop by my Instagram page, Rounding Third Sports. Leave me a comment, send me a message. Let me know what you like. Let me know what you don't like. Let me know what you want to hear about. If there's something I haven't talked about that you want to know about, we'll do that. And again, I'll be back next week. We'll do another one. We'll see what's happened in the world of sports over the next week. We'll talk. Obviously, we'll talk about the outcome of the Preakness Stakes as that runs here in about, from time of recording, in about 6 hours. Just at 6 hours. So we'll see if Medina Spirit, can make it 2-for-2 and on their way to a Triple Crown champion. So until next time, until next week, have a great week, everybody. And I'll be back again next Saturday.